You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Progressive improvement beats delayed perfection. Mark Twain, the prolific American author's pithy quote, best captures the elegant simplicity of what must be done to save South Africa from failed statehood. Attention will center on the flatlining South African economy this week as we saw the historic contraction in GDP down 51%, showing the need for urgent reforms. The speed and depth of the recovery will be influenced to a large extent by the degree to which government embraces business and the efficiencies of the private sector as the driver of this growth. The unavoidable fact is that we are a country in deep crisis. We were already in recession before COVID struck. Basic services under strain. Local government has been hollowed out by cadre deployment. Corruption is rampant and the public debt is a runaway train, threatening to smash into the hopes of the National Development Plan in a few years from now, unless something is done about the lack of reform implementation. Now, the one bright light on the horizon is government's newfound commitment to infrastructure to catalyze growth. And to discuss this now, I'm joined by Annabel Bishop, Investec Chief Economist, Webster Mfebe, CEO of the South African Forum of Civil Engineering Contractors, Dr. Azar Jameen, Chief Economist at Econometrics, and Chris Campbell, CEO of Consulting Engineers South Africa. Azar, show me a country anywhere in the world that didn't suffer some sort of historic plunge in second quarter GDP. So we're not quite unique here, but just how bad was it?
It was slightly worse than, I suppose, consensus forecast, but there were some people expecting an even worse outcome than what actually materialized. And certainly we're not really out of line with what we've seen in Europe and even the United States. We're not that far off them. And you probably find a lot of countries' economies have done even worse than ours. The real problem is that we were already in recession, unlike the rest of the world, prior to the COVID-19 crisis. And the big challenge, which speaks to the topic of the forum today, is how do we actually resurrect economic growth in a meaningful way once the COVID-19 effect is out of the way.
That is the big challenge in South Africa today. Annabel, looking through the numbers which have just come out and are in front of your screen, we see that 51% plunge quarter on quarter, year on year 16.3% down. What stands out for you amongst the wreckage, the detritus of that figure?
Yes, you know, certainly, Michael, if you have a look at household consumption expenditures, down by 50% from the first quarter to the second quarter. And of course, you know, this is an annualized figure, but it's contributed 31% to that 51% drop, you know, so the other sectors only 20% contribution. And I think, you know, the key point really here is that, of course, a lot of people lost their incomes. A lot of people, more importantly, saw a very sharp reduction in their income. So, you know, you actually saw the very low income earners supported by the government support subsidies. And of course, you saw the very high income earners managing to make their way through. It was really the middle income earners where you saw this big hit. And I think for me, this is what really comes through in the figures. Yes, you know, there was obviously some expenditure that what didn't drop down by 100%. But of course, you know, it really cut into people's discretionary income, certainly cut in on the luxury front. And I suppose the other key figure really here as well is from a fixed investment perspective, you know, that dropped down by 60%, you know, a smaller sector contributing 11% to that 51%. But nevertheless, of course, a massive hit to confidence, yes, but a very big smack to construction in the industry from a formal sector perspective, you know, not people obviously working on their homes and, you know, doing small scale stuff, but an entire industry shut down for 3 months. And of course, you know, starting up now, we're starting to see some good figures come in, certainly maybe for the last month of the second quarter, June, compared to the other 2 months. But of course, you know, that's just month on month. But for those indicators giving us figures in July, we're starting to see a rebound. But overall, Michael, still very strongly down on a year-on-year basis. I think, you know, this is a key difficulty for South Africa, you know, moving into the third quarter. How are we going to drive a very substantial rebound that is not only on the back of statistical base effects, given the problems we're facing from an electricity constraint perspective? And that's really what's carrying us through into the second half of this year. And of course, what contributed to the supply side recession that Azar Jameen was mentioning earlier, the three quarters of contraction, the last two of last year and the first of this year.
And Chris, we've had the issue of construction and manufacturing being the two catalyzers of growth in the various economic proposals and plans we've seen from business, from Treasury, from the ANC, as well And they all seem to converge on infrastructure. We've had the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium. The 50-odd strategic infrastructure projects have now been gazetted. But just from your vantage point at Consulting Engineers, the numbers that we're seeing come out of the GDP today clearly resonate with the lack of confidence that you're seeing in the sector. What do we need to see to ensure that we start rebuilding confidence in the manufacturing and construction industries?
Well, thanks, Michael. Firstly, I think what would help is a little bit more disclosure, a little bit more information in terms of what's the plan and how well are we doing in this process of realizing it. You know, we've heard a lot of talk about shovel ready and so forth. And certainly from a consulting engineering perspective, you know, which is really the front end, there's a lot of work that has been done already on some of these projects. And the question is that's not going to make a big difference until we can get to the point of actually executing these projects. Now I think, you know, much as that starts becoming the catalyst for more employment in the construction sector and subsequently in the manufacturing sector as the demand for materials increases, we mustn't lose sight of the bigger picture. We're not doing infrastructure just for jobs for now. We've got to look at it as long-term sustainability. So it's for economic growth. We need better roads, so we have, and we need better rail, so that we can have the export and the movement of goods and people, because that's essentially the driver of your economic growth. And that's the sustainability we're looking for.
Not just infrastructure for infrastructure's sake, but improving those network industries to Treasury's paper. Webster, if we look at the big issues in the construction sector, I was chatting to Sabina Dalomo, the CEO of Siemens Southern Africa and East Africa yesterday, and she said this issue of the construction mafia still bedevils projects all over the country. And it's a major impediment to investment into infrastructure, into construction, into local projects. So what are you seeing in terms of turning that situation around and reining in the construction mafia from your vantage point?
Well, I think it's important just to come in and just mention three critical factors that will ensure that the infrastructure is implemented in a sustainable manner. Which is the capacity and the competency of the state and the construction companies. It is an open secret that the capacity of the state, technical capacity, especially at local government level, is non-existent. There are no sufficient engineers to oversee that infrastructure build a program. The president has recently called for professionals to view the public sector as a career destination. Unfortunately, currently, that sector is seen as a graveyard for the careers of professionals until and unless they address that issue. Secondly, quickly, is the private sector capacity. With the lack of work, availability of work kills many contractors' capacity to build this infrastructure. Many big contractors are under business rescue, and some have fallen by the wayside. And also important in that area of capacity, that government must ensure that projects go to those who have the capacity. Inclusivity factor, the third one, which among other things does not only speak to the involvement of both the established and the emerging contractors in a balanced way, but community involvement. Now, that's where the construction mafias manifest in that environment. Lack of consultation and involvement with communities will cause the projects to be disrupted. We need to go out and make sure that there's early community involvement in the projects. We have managed to rein in the element of construction mafia by talking to the organized formations of the business forums, which is now legal and constitutional, and they've committed themselves to work with us, and we've seen less disruptions, because if you want to resolve a problem, involve those who are affected, understand from what point are they engaging in that and those activities. So we don't view them as criminals, but we view them as people want to be involved in the economic cake, in projects in their localities. However, having said that, we need to isolate the criminal element and throw the law book at the criminal element.
On that point, and it does come back to the issue of the rule of law in an environment where we see how the click saga, for example, has been exploited by lawless elements, petrol bombing stores, and it speaks to a lack of trust and rebuilding this trust between both the public and the private sector. Azar, just to bring you in on that last point of rebuilding trust, it's such a critical component to the reform of the South African economy. Martin Kingston yesterday at the Tax Indaba said we need 3.4 trillion rand over 3 years. And that's over and above some on-balance sheet state infrastructure projects. It's a vast sum of money. We can't fund that just off local sources as well. We need to attract FDI. And the only way we're going to do that is to start with local confidence, rebuilding that trust and repairing that trust. I'm not seeing anything evident in the reform narrative yet that goes a long way or a significant way in rebuilding that trust. And I want to use the example of the auction of spectrum. It was delayed yet again in an environment where, if this is not urgent, if a 51% plunge in GDP isn't urgent, what is?
I think you're absolutely correct to highlight the spectrum issue, especially going into a post-COVID environment where connectivity is now at a bigger premium than ever before in terms of running a business effectively and running so many of the economy's activities effectively. We are not going to see the economy return to the ways of the past in a substantial way. Connectivity is going to be in huge demand. And if we are not going to tackle this broadband spectrum thing in as a matter of total urgency, you're absolutely correct. We will not be able to achieve the growth that we need. Annabel was also correct with regard to energy security. These are two critical areas that have to be tackled even in the short term to ensure that the economy actually recovers. And trust is absolutely critical. Unfortunately, trust was destroyed over a period of a decade between the public and private sectors. President Ramaphosa, together with B4SA, and CEOs of business have been trying to rebuild that trust. But still, one gets the impression that they face pushback from many elements within the ruling party.
Annabel Bishop, why would the private sector invest in infrastructure in an economy where there is a lack of trust still, where there are still seemingly no arrest relating to state capture, while we pursue policies like expropriation without compensation, and we talk about nationalizing the Reserve Bank, and just throw into that mix the story of the minority shareholders who invested in AXA all of those years ago under the promise by government at that stage that AXA would be privatized, only for government to renege on that promise. There just doesn't seem to be any acknowledgement in government of the work that it has to do to rebuild that dwindling trust.
Absolutely, Michael. You know, and of course, the way you stated now, clearly it just would not be a big incentive at all. I think perhaps one key area where you may incite some private sector interest into the state infrastructure program and obviously investing in it would clearly be if the returns look attractive. And, you know, from that perspective, investors really want to know two things. Will they get their money back? And of course, you know, what will be the opportunity cost of that return? And of course, you know, government in a way almost setting itself up to fail with its huge borrowings, because, you know, already if you have a look at the yield on government debt around about 9%, you know, obviously moving towards 10% slowly at the moment as well, your benchmark 10-year government bond, of course, a very attractive investment opportunity there already provided. You know, if you look at your short-term money market rates, borrowing short and investing in these longer-term rates, really the reality of the situation is inside Africa is a finite pool of savings. And of course, you know, already the pension funds are heavily invested in these high yield government bonds that we're talking about. You know, a decade ago, you know, under the Thabo Mbeki leadership, we might have seen the 10-year government bond yield close to 6%. the repo rate obviously higher in that period. Now, of course, obviously this very wide differential, even for foreign investors, there's attraction there as well. And of course, you know, this again is quite difficult. If government obviously mandates the investment, you know, that really shows you there's a big trust deficit. It couldn't get it voluntarily. It hasn't attractive returns, then of course, you know, from that perspective, again, shooting themselves in the foot because they have got such a large borrowing program ahead of us. You know, we haven't finished the debt issuance. We're at about 2 billion rand a day, you know, during the working day a week. And of course, again, as I said, a finite pool of savings, whether it's in the pension fund industry or elsewhere, government's really going to have to make a very attractive return case in order to actually get in this investment. As you put it on face value, just asking people to invest with, you know, not much of a return, given what's happened in the past, given the lack of people being bought to book. At the moment, it's not really feeling like it's a big incentive.
Chris, when we look at the models that we might seek to emulate here in the public infrastructure drive, obviously the old ways of building public infrastructure on balance sheet, gearing up a state-owned enterprise like Eskom or Transnet, clearly out of the window. So all the talk is of public-private partnerships. What are the sort of innovative funding mechanisms that could be employed to help finance these projects?
Well, Michael, I think that, you know, nothing new to our markets, just probably needs to be explored more and more. It's the issuance of project bonds. You know, if you look at the development of economic infrastructure, then certainly the project bonds model would be the way to go. I mean, if you look at the kind of money that, you know, from the CISA, the Savings Association, indicates is available. I mean, we're looking at possible cash availability of well over 4 trillion. But, you know, this is money that has to be paid back. And you know, certainly there are other elements that would have to into play so that there is a win-win situation. Because quite frankly, you know, this is other people's money on which they're expecting a return, you know, one day when they retire. So we have to be responsible about how we implement these processes.
What's more important at the moment? And Webb, I'm going to ask this one to you. If we look at the need to build this infrastructure, not only to create jobs immediately, but to unlock the network industries, the new roads that are going to allow services to get to ports quicker, the new broadband infrastructure that are going to allow businesses to access markets. Is that more important, or is local procurement and sticking to BEE and issues of transformation more important at a time like this? I would argue that it's more important to get the economy going again and for us to start talking about things like local procurement after we've at least catalyzed the engine of growth.
Yes, transformation is important. Local involvement, as I've indicated before, is important. But we need not see the trees, we need to see the forest in terms of what is important to catalyze the economy, to reignite the economy, and which is the commitment of government to make these plans implementable and to make the projects available to the market, because the South African construction sector has the requisite capacity and competence to undertake these projects. And until and unless that happens, but in a well-balanced way, I referred earlier to the issue of inclusivity, that both the established and the emerging contractors have got to be involved in the implementation of these projects. But what we have seen is that aim of transformation, projects have been given to incompetent black companies, whereas the competent black companies that I know that have the requisite capacity and competence to build that have been sidelined in favor of politically connected acolytes who continue to pollute the integrity of the procurement system in South Africa. So we have to strengthen and create credibility in the tender system, which I hate so much. If we get those things right and concentrate on those projects, that will make a big difference. For an example, SANRAL announced 6 billion of ready projects to be awarded. We're still waiting. We don't know what the delay is in getting those projects in the market. But what we do know is that when Sanral does issue the awards, they are competent in terms of managing those projects. And I would like to take this opportunity to call on them, because the roads are a key to igniting the economy. Goods and services move on the roads. Investors need a good network of roads, among other infrastructure imperatives in the country. We've got to get that right.
Speaking to Mark Dieter, the CEO of AECI, of which a subsidiary is Much Asphalt, he expressed huge cynicism at the recent SIDS model and the announcement of these projects. He says, we've just heard it too many times in the past, and we failed to see infrastructure used to deliver. As a final parting comment, as we'll go around the panel here, if you were advising the president right now, if you were seated next to him on a plane, probably wearing your mask at this time of COVID-19, and you were to give him one or two quick wins to help stimulate confidence and help turn this economy around as quickly as possible, because there are signs, looking at company results, we are seeing a return to some semblance of normality. What would that be?
There's no question, if you analyze the indicators, that the fact is that as soon as you have had some lifting of restrictions, you have had an increase in economic growth. The one remaining restriction that is still stifling foreign investment and investor confidence more generally internally as well is the ban on international travel. I think it would be to start opening up the country again to international travel, both into and from this country, and you would see a huge uptick in a whole lot of services that would, I think, regenerate some confidence in this country. That's a very short-term perspective, absolutely. From a longer-term perspective, government also has to play its role. It's something we haven't spoken about, and that is that government itself has been the biggest disinvestor in the South African economy in the last 5 years, not the private sector.
And that goes counter to this myth and this narrative that the private sector has been on an investment strike. Chris, you were seated next to the president on a plane. What would your advice be?
You know, I would certainly want to share with the president that there's an absolute need for speed. You know, there's an urgency around what we need to do to regrow our economy. And if the low-hanging fruits are indeed to be derived from infrastructure development, then let's not try and get all 50 of those projects that's been spoken about shovel-ready. Let's start with one or two of them. They're going to be big enough. And that it's a bit like a snowball effect. So let's start that little snowball. Because, you know, as you hold back, and if there's anything preventing you from doing that, then let's embrace the private sector capacity, because I suspect that there may be serious technical capacity challenges. And the private sector have offered countless times to step up to the plate to assist in unblocking the pipeline that may be the cause of this situation.
Webster?
I would say to the president, strengthen the capacity and the competency of the state. You cannot reimagine a new South African economy with some of the people in your team who lack imagination. Strengthen consequence management. Walk the talk. For an example, up to July this year, we have seen 517% of the cancellation of projects. This year up to July alone. So walk the talk, make the projects available so that we can ignite the economy, if indeed infrastructure investment is the backbone for the economic recovery of this country.
Annabelle?
Yes, I would say very quickly and easily, I would certainly look at easing the ability to do business in South Africa. It has become incredibly difficult due to the extremely onerous burden and complexity of regulations in the South African economy. And we saw under the COVID-19 lockdowns the ability and ease with which legislation was quickly put in place. And similarly, there could be a presidential directive to dramatically cut back on the stranglehold of red tape that we're facing in the South African economy. And of course, if you have a look at a lot of the organizations like BUSA and a number of others, they have written numerous papers on exactly where in the manufacturing industry we need to see the regulatory complexity ease, and other industries as well. And of course, particularly if you have a look at the smelter industry, the heavy industrial industry in South Africa, foundries, again, just really battling under the snow, well, being snowed under by this huge legislation effect. But of course, if you actually have a look deeper, longer term, you know, another key area is to really improve the productivity of the civil service in the South African economy. We've got a difficult situation where the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism is also the Department of Economic Development in South Africa. Unsurprisingly, you're not seeing environmental certificates issued, you're not seeing the environmental compliance certificates issued, air quality, all of those. Even when they are issued, they're rolled back and firms are then fired, even though they thought they were compliant, being told, no, you, it was not our fault that we made a mistake, you are non-compliant, and of course you have a big fine to face. It's a huge disincentive to industrial production in South Africa. It's caused deindustrialization, and you are losing quality, or we have lost quality jobs. Quick win would be to reduce the complexity of legislation, longer term to really improve the quality and productivity of the civil service, and of course separate out the necessary departments so we can actually get the show on the road and really start creating substantial, long-term and high-quality jobs in South Africa.
And I think the common thread amongst all of those is that they're eminently achievable with political will. Do we have the political will and urgency on the back of that historic plunge in the second quarter GDP? Annabel Bishop, Investec Chief Economist, Webster and Febe, CEO of the South African Forum of Civil Engineering Contractors, Dr. Azar Jameen, Chief Economist at Econometrics, and Chris Campbell, CEO of Consulting Engineers South Africa.